They define now the NCDs, you know, the NCDs? But there will be panics. No. There will be pandemics of NCDs.
Non-communicable diseases, yes. Like heart disease,
yes.
Cancers.
Like drinking too much alcohol.
So they'll use every single thing.
Like a little fat in the ass, too. You get a pandemic of fatty ass.
Hey, they're going after everything that makes life worth living.
Yes.
Hey all, happy Christmas. And a short interview today from Sweden back in September. And James Patrick, who made Planet Lockdown, actually did the camera work. So it's very kind of mobile. And I think it's a great look. And it's with Professor Wolfgang Wodarg, who's a true hero, who overturned the swine flu debacle back in 2009. And he's an expert in virology, infectious diseases, a doctor, also a member of parliament. Did an incredible job, so a fantastic man. And we have a good chat around the state of the world today, and we go through some of the technical points of the recent debacle in the last few years, and it's a great conversation. So please subscribe, share, and hit the notification bell, and enjoy this lovely chat.
I'm here in Sweden at a superb conference where we're discussing the future of the people and the planet and some of the headwinds that are against us. And I've just met up in person with Wolfgang Wodarg.
Hello.
Great to meet you in person. I know we talked a while ago on Zoom. And just briefly, in my mind, even before COVID, I was aware that you were the hero of swine flu. Almost single-handedly took down that madness, or were instrumental. But in COVID, you've also been trying to help us all. But you have new material for your talk today that kind of centres around the current challenges we face. And it'd be great if we could discuss that in brief.
We are in a situation where we experienced the power of this instrument, WHO. And who is handling this instrument? How do they do it? And why do they choose the WHO? How did they shape it? This will be the topic. How did they shape WHO to use it as their instrument for ruling us and controlling the world, if possible? And I think it's a very important thing. And on the other hand, immediately there comes the question, what can we do against that? We were proud to have democracies. Why didn't they function? Were they just a story, a fairy tale we were fed with from childhood? We were playing games. What is real democracy? What are the conditions of real democracy? And it's about society, it's about communication. We have different opinions, we have different views, we are all different, but we have all equal rights, all different, all equal. And so this is the basis of this is that we say there is something like, something like human dignity, something like autonomy, and not only personal autonomy, but also the autonomy of social entities, of groups, of families, of larger social entities. If we want a democracy, we have to safeguard this, and we have to organize in a way that those many tasks we have to fulfill in the modern world, we have so many technology, we can use them all to live better. And it's very complicated. So we have to entrust many things to people because we cannot do them ourselves, and we have to simplify the society. But there are some things we need, like education of children, like care for each other when we are frail and old, and all those things, or even the exchange. If I work something, you work something, and we can exchange what we did. So the function of money, and we have to safeguard this in a way that it's transparent, that if somebody tries to misuse it, that we immediately recognize something's going wrong and we can correct it. So transparency is the condition for self-organizing societies who are just dependent on sharing, work sharing.
And you know, you've hit on the key ones there for a safe kind of healthy democracy, but those very ones, we know education for decades now has been subverted. with no transparency by NGOs, by influencers, and the education system has been undermined. And in terms of money, we're now seeing, with no transparency or honesty, the move to central bank digital currencies, which are a control thing. They're not digital. We've already got digital money. It's the central. Yes. But there's no transparency.
You're right. This is there is still feudalism.
Yeah.
Feudalism is still a driving force in this world. And feudalism is growing when there are two kinds. If there is, if there are people who think they are superior, and they have to care for the others. This is this thinking, this feeling, and it's still there. It was there for thousands of years, and it's still there. And what we try, this experimental democracies we had, we tried out. They were observing this, and they if they want to keep their power and to stay and reorganize their power, they need they can do many things. They can reduce the population so that they control them better with wars, for instance. They had the First World War, the Second World War. And the same thing, they earn a lot of money by reducing population. They take the money from the population, the taxes, for let them buy weapons, let them buy drugs, and so. So they earn a lot of money while reducing population. And they try, you know, you have to read Machiavelli or Benet, and then you can see what thinking is behind. It's very rational. It's very rational. And they have, because they have earned so much money with all those wars and with all those selling us things we don't need, so Coca-Cola and so on. And so they have so much money that they can buy very clever people. They go to the universities, select the best students, and pay them a lot, and let them make plans how to do what they want. And we have big organizations you can buy who make propaganda, professional propaganda.
And the media, and also this explosion of NGOs, non-governmental organizations, they can pile money into them. Ireland, where I am, as a small example, we are seething with NGOs. They are like flies on feces. And the government is funding them all with our money. And they are subverting and destroying our freedoms.
It's a cheap way. You know, when you want to influence, you have to watch the grassroots, what opinions are growing. And people who are self-organized may be dangerous. But if you go and help them, yes? If you help them, you can give them a little bit, because mostly they have no money, they have no power, and you have the money, so you will help them. And you install people there who help you. And it's normally called corruption, because the power comes from the people, and if you buy power, this is corruption.
Yes, and I think Just Stop Oil and all the nonsense of the last years, I believe one of the key ladies in that, or funding it, is a niece of Rockefeller's. So the oil money is indirectly, corruptly funding Stop Oil. Yeah, right. Come on.
The oil has shaped our society and has formed our society with all those cars, machines, and everywhere where we need energy, we need oil and gas and all this stuff. And this has shaped our, and those people who rule the energy, they rule the people. And they collect the money, and they can buy propaganda. And they can shape our brains with propaganda now, and they shape society with weapons, with power. So they bought mercenaries, and so you can buy, when you have money, you can buy mercenaries, or you can influence politicians so that they send their mercenaries to what you want. And so there are many ways. So money is ruling the world. Everyone knows this. And we say it without analysing how it goes.
That triggers a thought. We had a breakfast this morning, or I brought up. The people, for many decades, broadly speaking, the ordinary people who were fooled with COVID, they always understood that big pharma was a bad thing, that big pharmaceutical was you know, cheating generally and was not to be trusted. But during COVID, they somehow did a magical thing. They got everyone to vote fast, switch, and see Big Pharma as a savior. Wasn't that astonishing, switch? And it was the whole vaccine savior myth, creation myth thing.
Depends on the fear, on fear-mongering, on the perfect fear-mongering. When you have a good fear-mongering, you can reach this goal. And you the people are really afraid, and they look for everything that could help them. And then the state is in between the pharmaceutical industry and the patient or the people. Normally, the people go to the doctor. And in the swine flu, it was different. They sold their drugs to the nation from tax money. But the drugs were used by the doctors. They were to be used by the doctors. Now, they sold the drugs to the governments too, but they directly used the drugs. So they had teams, they had so-called vaccination teams, and they used even military to organize the whole thing. They said it needs to be frozen 80 degrees minus in Celsius, and so we all have to watch them. And so they were watching that the whole campaign started with a military operation. And people queued there. There's no speak, talk with the doctor and the patient. Is it good for me, doctor? And the doctor very often in swine flu said, no, you don't need it. Very often. So they didn't use all those vials in the swine flu. They bought them, but the doctors didn't prescribe them, didn't use them. And they learned from that. And this is why they had this trick with 80 degrees minus. We have to have a system to start the whole campaign. And then it's another difference is that they have bought the media in the meantime. When I had this discussion about the Swine Flu in the Council of Europe, there were 3,000 reports all over the world, in Japan and everywhere in Asia and South America. They all were discussing this big, big scam, this fake pandemic. And they were, and the Council of Europe was very proud to be mentioned everywhere in the world. It was a big, big scandal. And the media reported the scandal. There's no media reporting scandals, no more. So they have learned in those more than 10 years, they have learned a lot, and they tried how to do it. They tried out. There were many such exercises, pandemic exercises.
With senior media heads invited, like the big one in 2019, obviously, with Bill Gates and Johns Hopkins in New York,
yes.
Late 19. What if there was maybe a big coronavirus pandemic?
Yes, and
someday.
There's a more important event even in 19. This was the going together of all media bosses in London. When they promised each other and they said, and the governments and the media guys, they promised that they would fight misinformation. It was in July 2019. They prepared it very well.
Very well. And YouTube CEO, I think February 20 or March 20, straight out said it. If you contradict the WHO, as you said, the
yes.
WHO, that is the kind of the head of the snake, we will take your video down. Yes. Doesn't matter what it is, whether it's debated.
And there's another thing, you know, when you want to have a if you have corrupt politicians, it's you have to work a lot. You have to go to each party, and you have to work really hard to if you want to corrupt ministries and health ministers and so on, all the clerks there. So they have learned that it is much more efficient when you just corrupt the top of a new organization.
Yeah.
And this is why they had this program with Global Young Leaders, Global Young Shapers. So they prepared the tops. They promised the people, you will be very well trained. You will be the one knowing more than all the others. We will be an excellent leader. And we have a network of leaders all over the world. You will know them all. You'll get to know them. You will cooperate worldwide with them. And we will help you to win the elections. You're a bright boy. They just have a new bright boy from Goldman Sachs they installed in Greece. And they let them run for Communist and Socialist Party.
Just recently, I haven't been following.
Yes, in jail 1 week ago. He's a strong guy, smiling, and he's homosexual, but
that is favoured strongly, again, without getting into that topic. I've noticed, and in Ireland and all over, and I think is it Austria or Germany, and Trudeau, there are question marks, but they really like that. And I suspect because, you know, you don't really want family type people with like seven kids.
No.
Because they're hard to corrupt because they've got their kids to think about. But if you're a lone wolf, no kids, no question, a lot easier.
Yeah, or the other way is to put people under pressure, to know something about them. The German Chancellor, he had some talks with a criminal bank, and he cannot remember what he taught. He'd forgotten. But they didn't forget. They know what he said. So if you have such a situation, if you cooperate with criminals, and they know it and they can use it anytime.
And no doubt there are lots of improprieties with many leaders that are known, and as long as they stay in line, no one else gets to know. But you know, I am conscious you have your talk now very shortly at 10 a.m. and I know you need to do your final preparation. So are there any key points from your talk to add in before we...
I will speak about one thing. It's about a formula and I will explain it. And I can show the formula to you. It's this one. Mm. It's very easy. You should have a tattoo on your arm with this.
I like it.
Never forget it. Because it's resilience. Resilience is dependent on transparency. What we understand, what we can control, where we can say no, when we entrust something, that we can say, oh no, you misused it. This is, the more transparent, the better the resilience. The bigger the size, this game you cannot play. The bigger the size, the less resilient the whole thing.
Talk.
And the more complicated, the more complex it is, that you don't understand it, that you are dependent on specialists. If you organize a society and you're dependent on specialists, it's easy to bribe specialists, and you're dependent on specialists. So this has to do with transparency. Yeah. So we have to understand when we organize, we have to understand what we do, and we have to be aware of possible mistakes.
And you know, Wolfgang, I'm just seeing there, they... the conspiratorial day, but let's be honest, we know who they are now. They absolutely minimize T, maximize S, and maximize C.
Sure.
It's just so obvious. So they just do the opposite. But I mean, the pseudo complexity of COVID, I was beating my head off a wall back in 2020 saying, look, there's immense complexity in everything, but it comes down to this. The simple fact of who's dying and how many.
Yes.
That's it. You don't need to be a virologist. I love that. So we'll feature that on the screen. Perfect. You know, any other key?
There is another thing about viruses. This is 10 million passengers in aeroplanes going around the world in one day. In one day. And they all have billions of viruses in their body and around their body, on their skin, they breathe. They exchange them each day, 10 million passengers, and they tell us there's one virus from Wuhan. And this comes all over the world. It's such a stupid story. If they think virology is something with illnesses. No, virology is about nature. It's normal, and our immune system knows how to deal with it. We learn, and the viruses learn to know, to install themselves in our body, and our immune system. So it's a biological process. And if you want to say something about illnesses, you just have to count how many people get ill. You just have to see how many people die. It's so easy. We can all see it. You can see there is something wrong. There is an epidemic. There's an outbreak. When you're a teacher, when you're an employer, and you know when your people get sick, and you know there's some, but nobody saw nothing. Nothing changed in the swine flu. Nothing changed in the birds flu, and nothing changed in this SARS-CoV-2.
Effectively, outside of nursing homes, maybe it was a nasty period. But
I didn't hear a cough or a sneeze for 2 years.
That's true. I told my mother, who's 80, in her 80s, And she lives in an area in Dublin where it's almost a pastime to go to funerals because all the people there are older.
Sure.
So, oh, the big funeral next week.
Yeah. And I said, who's next?
Who's next? Yeah. And I said to my mother, I just said, as an example, I haven't heard you've gone to funerals in the last year. And she said, no, I haven't. But this is the biggest pandemic ever. And it's overwhelmingly focused on elderly, frail people.
Yes.
How come you've not been at any funerals?
Yes.
She said, oh, it's a good point. See, I had to keep my mother sane. Every week or two, I had to re-explain. Yes. Nothing is happening. Gotcha.
Yes.
So, excellent. And certainly we're approaching your deadline. Maybe a last thought would be super.
Yeah, I know why the WHO is very important, because it's defining. It's defining everything around health. They say which diseases they are. There are the ICD. They say what is an emergency, how you can see it. They have the means to detect it. They blow it up. And they say the PCR test is when you can use the PCR test to see when there's something going on. And they find it in the nose of a dromedar. They find medicine. They go to India and find some viruses where there are two cases. And when there are four, it's 100% grown. Yeah. And so
what do you have here? These are all the definitions, huh?
Yes, they just make the definitions from everything. They define pandemics. They define what do you have to do for prevention, which are the threats of health. They define now the NCDs. You know the NCDs? But there will be panics. No. There will be pandemics of NCDs.
Non-communicable diseases, yes. Like heart disease,
yes.
Cancers.
Like drinking too much alcohol.
So they'll use every single thing.
Like a little fat in the ass, too. You get a pandemic of fatty ass.
Hey, they're going after everything that makes life worth living.
Yes.
So, and this and you know the irony, people have pointed out that this happens to sound like
this is,
fake.
It's spelled like fake. It's
like fake. Like they're kind of telling us. It's shocking. But you know, one last question I'll ask you, and it's something that's on my mind all the time now, and I would guess yours. The awakening of people is not what we would like after this absurdity of COVID. We should have much more people awakening and pushing back. But it is positive that a lot more people now, I think, even ones who will not admit it was nonsense, even those people who will not admit they were completely wrong, I think a lot of people are not going to play the game again so easily for a virus, maybe a climate or a financial crisis. But do you think there's a lot of people now who push back harder on a nonsense health crisis?
I think, too, they have to find out something else. They have to find out new things. But this, it's like with the weapon industry, you know. All those people who may produce some threat, like the weapon industry, the most dangerous rockets and tanks and everything.
Hypersonic.
Yes.
Rockets.
And weather changing. And they all offer their possibilities. They develop, they have a patent on it, and they offer it to those rich people. And with our weapons, you can change the world. Yes, and then you have the bio laboratories. We have the most dangerous viruses. And, you know, the dangerous virus is stupid. It would be the most stupid virus because it cannot spread. It just kills its host, and then it's self-limiting.
Yeah.
So it should be, every doctor should know it.
Yeah. And, you know, a successful virus, there are sad cases where the virus may overwhelm a person, usually immunocompromised and elderly, where you could argue that that is their time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly it would just stay with the host and keep changing to play with the host's immune system.
Yes, the most successful viruses are those we don't recognize, we don't feel.
Yeah, perfect.
They are perfect.
They're
spreading
around
everywhere. You know, I'm a little bit, there's this new technology they use to insert nucleic acids into our body. To our cells, to reprogram our cells. This is a very stupid technology because our immune system is recognizing those altered cells, the cells who are modified, and kills them. And this makes all the side effects of this.
The inflammatory reaction to this RNA thing. Yeah.
And the immunological errors that happen afterwards. So they don't, the cells don't recognize each other, and they cannot speak with each other anymore. They cannot communicate in the body, and so you have autoimmune diseases and all this stuff. And so, but the body is tries to reestablish some equilibrium afterwards, and it's a very good experience. There is some gene technology to change the genes of newborn babies that cannot produce a protein they need. They're dependent on one protein, and then so they change the cells of this baby with some gene therapy, and they hope that the baby produces the protein it needs and can survive. And there's one drug, Zolgensma, it was called the most expensive therapy ever. And they produced it, and they now found out that it only lasts, this effect only lasts for some time, for some months or some years, and then it vanishes. Mm. It's a good sign that the body tries to reestablish its identity, its
initial identity,
cellular or molecular identity. And so if we think this could happen too with other gene therapies, like for instance with the RNA injections many people got.
Yeah.
And so the people very often ask, will I have to be afraid my whole life that something happens? And you can say, no, your body will do something with it. So after
thank you, Odark, for that, or Wolfgang, because yes. That has come up again and again. I meet so many people, even here in this movement, who still are talking about the apocalypse to come from this mass injection. And I have always instinctively taken the approach, if you get a year or two after the shots of this nonsense drug, chances are you can just say, I didn't get a clot, I didn't get autoimmunity, I don't have some kind of weird reactions.
That's right.
I probably may, but forget it. Thank you.
Nature is much more intelligent than those engineers, those specialists who are blind, who only know a lot in their field.
The integrators of everything are the people who answer all these complex things. And as you were in politics, you were in people, you're an MD, full doctor, and a researcher. So ultimately, you get the integrator prize. Thank you so much, Wolfgang.
Thank you. Thank you for all this talk.
Thanks to all who have supported me over the past years in getting accurate data out there and the interviews with the best experts and countering media misinformation. That's our mission. So anyone who's helped on my Patreon or PayPal, really appreciate it. And anyone else who can continue to do so. Thank you.